Welcome, welcome, welcome to Planning Phase Syndicate episode 69. And no, there will not be any inappropriate jokes. Hint, hint, guys. No inappropriate jokes tonight. Tonight, we are going to be doing our continued discussion on chess theory and how it applies to X-Wing. Tonight, we're going to recap Craig Cup a little bit. We're not going to get into a lot of detail because next week we have a surprise announcement that I'll let JJ make here when he gets on the show in a few minutes. And we're also going to be talking about Defender Vader, because it seems everybody wants to have a whole conversation about Defender Vader again, since it made a little bit of a splash at Crate Cup. So we thought, hey, let's have a little bit of a discussion on that. Without further ado, let's bring in George and my good friend JJ, who spiked his hair specifically for tonight instead of wearing his ugly Giants hat. Psych J, how are you doing tonight, sirs?
Doing very well. Excited to be here tonight and also very tired after a great Crate Cup. For the record, I did wear a brand new Giants cap the entirety of the Swiss, just because I knew that if I walked by the stream table where I was going to be on stream, I wanted to make sure that I would appear with my Giants cap. And then today we were playing cut, so I had to spike up my hair because this is like my serious mode. And I just haven't taken a shower since I've gotten home. So that's it.
Oh, you stinky motherfucker then.
Yes.
George, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. So before we get into Crate Cup or any of the fun, adventurous stuff that we want to talk about tonight, what I want to do is I want to introduce George real quick. George is he won our Planning Phase Syndicate playoffs or tournament or whatever you want to call it back in July. And he's topped at Nova, and he's also topped at some of the recent GSP stuff. So if you hadn't noticed, Charles has been a little bit of absent. Charles is actually currently working two jobs right now. And in between that, and then he actually had to move. So what we wanted to do is kind of bring another body in a little bit here, and we've been kind of doing some guest hosting. And George has said that he is able to commit for a couple more weeks to just essentially help fill out until Charles is able to come back and work with us again. So welcome aboard, George. Thank you for giving us an hour and a half to 2 hours of your time every Sunday night.
It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
And I think it makes me feel better because I was outnumbered by the scum players in the room, and now CSI players outnumber everything. So
there we go.
Feel a little bit better. With that being said, hope everybody had a good weekend. My weekend was pretty decent. It consisted of my wife's brakes failing, and she had a caliper pull either shear off or completely come out. So I had to replace that before the show. So that was super fun. I haven't had to do that in like 5 years. So I taught my daughter though how to replace a caliper bolt and what each of the little pieces are. So she's going to be 14 next month. And I said, well, this is how you change a tire, and here's how you do some of your brake stuff. There you go. Thought it was pretty interesting. She kind of liked seeing some of that. So that was kind of fun with that. We also painted little plastic frogs this weekend, because she wanted to, so it was kind of fun. And then my son bought Cyberpunk, which I didn't know like even still existed. I thought they canceled that game, but I guess not. So,
it's getting its own Netflix series too coming up.
Yeah, I think that's why my son bought it.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. It was kind of fun. We did that this weekend. George, how was your weekend? What did you do this weekend?
Oh, during the weekend, I was also playing X-Wing. They were having a little tournament over in Melbourne. So just kind of...
Australia? You flew to Australia?
No, Florida. Oh, okay. Didn't leave the state.
So, the Space Coast guys?
Yep, get your fun on store. Yep. So we were helping kick off the live events there again. It was nice. It was they capped it at 16, which ended up almost everybody showed up. Like we were like 15. I think we had a bye at one point. So it was nice.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. JJ, So to begin with, we're gonna go ahead and recap Crate Cup. But JJ has an announcement about the show next week. So JJ, you want to kick it off with your announcement?
Yes. So for next week, my teammate on Team Yasby's Baddies, Mr. D Yoon, will be joining us on the podcast next week. He was very instrumental in our win for our run here at Crate Cup. He did help replace Andrew. You guys know him as Velvet Buddha on Discord. He was supposed to be joining us. Unfortunately, he got sick before the event, and D Yoon was our alternate that came in and filled the role. I can honestly say D is such a great guy. So very, very nice. I had a great time playing with D. He definitely was a hell of an Empire player. And he was just fantastic.
Did he fly Vader Defender?
Crate Cup for those who guessed. No, he did not fly Vader Defender. He was a champ and played X1 Vader and did very, very well. So for those who don't know what Crate Cup is, it's a yearly tournament here in Durham, North Carolina. It's a team event where you form teams of three people, each with a different list, and you get paired up as a team against another team to compete in different rounds there. Your team gets points according to how many wins you get over the course of the tournament. So even if you don't get like a 4-1, as long as you had enough points as a team to like reach the cut, then you make the cut, which in our case, there was a four-way tie for third place. So that actually made it a top five cut, giving the Team White Walkers the bye for the first round. And we did make that cut there. We won our first match against, it was actually a revenge match for us. We faced off against a team that had beaten us in the last round yesterday, and we beat them in the first round. And then we faced off against Team White Walkers, which is Duncan Howard's team. It was a very, very close matchup there, but they did end up getting the win and going on to the final and taking it all. But we had a great time there, got to see quite a lot of people there, and yeah, can't wait for next year.
Well, awesome. That sounds like a lot of fun. Sounds like you guys had quite a bit of fun doing your Crate Cup tournament. So why don't we begin there? And I don't want to give away too much, you know. Can you give us just kind of a little bit of the highlights of the weekend? So if you watched it, GSP streamed it. Scott from Hexiled was on as well. I will say my one takeaway that I'm absolutely abhorred by is the effing mat that they use for the tables. And I'll tell you what.
Yes.
Yes. I looked at that mat. Oh, I almost bought that mat, right? Like, I almost was going to give you money and have you buy me that mat. But after I saw it on stream, I said, this is the most ugly, just overly convoluted mat I've ever seen. Like, I could hang it on a wall, but I never want to use it.
So the most common complaint that I heard from people is that they kept on losing track of the obstacles because the slight blue that's on the mat blends in with the Pride of Mandalore rocks and asteroids that if you're not paying attention, you literally could be staring at the mat and you can't see them. So people would dial in maneuvers that would accidentally like overlap the obstacles. Like it was so terrible. Like for me, like if I didn't have Kira, I think we would have not made cut, honestly, because there were so many times I had like accidentally just clipped my Kira rock without wanting to. And holy crap, man. Like,
Yeah. So if I have to give a critique, no offense. And again, I understand everybody did, you know, everybody's doing a good job. For me, that was just too much. I don't know.
Yeah, it was busy. It was definitely busy. Yeah. But yeah, the event went very, very well. I kind of to lead into that, one of the things that I experienced there was definitely there was a lot of Defender Vader, and very strangely, there was one resistance list out of all the teams, which is really odd. Like I just thought that, you know, with resistance doing so well as of late, you know, in the meta, especially in our analysis. Not seeing like a very big amount of resistance was very, very surprising. But Empire was definitely very, very heavy across the board. Pretty much every team that played had an Empire list by far.
That's just weird. George, so question for you. Do you feel it's because people either just like Empire that much more? Is it just better to fly? Or is it because Resistance Y-Wings are boring as hell?
I want to say it's more of, as far as Defender Vader lists and stuff like that, I think that's more straightforward and a safer list to fly. It's very good at what it does, and good enough to make cut in events. It's just one of those lists.
You just say it. You can say it.
Okay. It's consistent. It makes cut. I mean, that's what it's there for. You want to make cut, so you fly a good list. That's a good list.
All right. What else, JJ? Anything else on Crate Cup? I know next week we're going to kind of get it. I apologize. I couldn't find all the lists and do all this other stuff. I couldn't find them on TTT. And so we're going to have to wait to during the week. I'm assuming that was probably done on purpose, but whatever. And next week we'll actually cover some of the lists. And hopefully there's a way I can see the lists and the breakdowns. So we can actually look at win-loss ratio for Swiss and different things like that. I know it's a team event. And I get that, and I understand the logic in it, and I think there's a deeper piece to team events. And I think next week what we're going to do is we're going to kind of sideline. We're going to talk about the Crate Cup, and we're going to talk about, could this be a future piece of X-Wing that's viable, A, to play in, and B, is more fun, right? And I think it offers a unique competitive aspect to it that we haven't seen before, right? And so I don't want to get into that piece of it this week, because I think next week we could probably take almost a whole episode and go through that. But anyway, did you have any other things you wanted to cover for Crate Cup before we move on?
The only other thing is just a shout out to my teammates again, D-Yoon, great player, and of course Scout. Most of you know him as Burning Stick on Discord. He was our team captain and helped set up all the different matchups for us. He was a great FO player, and I played Scum. I played Boba, Iman, and Kanan list, and we definitely had a great time together playing, and I can't wait till next year. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, so Standy in the chat, they posted that they had fun playing the Nickel City League, which was similar style. Greg had a few different roles. We did play Extended. You know, those different things, but Nickel City League is up to 6 teams, I think, for season 2 right now, or 7 teams, and we're on the verge of having an 8th team. So if you have not signed up, JJ is going to go get the thing and post it in the Discord. but go to the Discord, get the Google form link that JJ will post, and sign up if you want to play in the league. It's free, right? It's free. It's just a fun thing that we can do, and there's enough like competition, right, that if you want to play a competitive list you can, but if you want to just be like what Tanner did and play fun lists, that you could do that too. You can look at my record compared to JJ's, and there's a difference, but I had fun playing things that, you know, like were not super meta every time, and it was fun, and I got to play a different faction that I don't normally play, so that was kind of fun too. So shout out to Velvet Buddha, who got COVID and couldn't play in Crate Cup, but we had quite a bit of freedom. So quite a bit of freedom. And Greg will probably have in 3 weeks they'll do a draft. So there'll be actually a live draft. We'll post in our Discord. And the week before, we'll post about it and let everybody know. So if they want to come watch it, the draft is pretty fun just to watch. At least it was last time. I sat on my porch with a big ass glass of whiskey and watched people running by while my fat ass sat in the stool and watched my X-Wing stuff. So that was fun. All right. So why don't we transition a little bit? Let's talk about Defender Vader. So I'm going to caveat this discussion two ways. So JJ, just because Defender Vader won a team event or kind of won a team event, still does not make it so OP that we have to ban or do all these crazy things. But you brought up that you wanted to have a discussion tonight about Defender Vader. So I'm gonna give you the floor. You get 2 minutes to lay out the premise, and then we're gonna have a conversation about why you're wrong.
Okay, so great way to set the tone there. definitely the most common ship that I saw on the board across the Krayt Cup definitely was Defender Vader and the majority of the Empire list there. I'm going to preface this that I was able to beat Defender Vader in two separate lists. With my particular list, and my other losses that I had were Defender Vader as well. Now, granted, both of those losses were with Ben Doyle, who is a phenomenal player. He is spectacular. He really flew his list very, very well there. But I gotta say, like, he's a very strong piece with what he has currently right now. In terms of points, I think that Defender Vader is in a good spot. He is definitely worth his piece. I would actually value him the same as a Fire Spray, right? Like Boba at 9 points, because he is just that menace there. But because he has access to a lot of pieces that make him very, very consistent on offense, it can be a little bit of a negative play experience because he's pretty much easy mode, right? Because the most common upgrades that you see on Vader are going to be Malice, which will generate a crit for him when he's attacking, and Juke, which is pairs up nicely with the chassis ability to gain a free evade once you do a 3-speed maneuver higher. Those particular combos are extremely devastating when it comes to certain objectives, namely salvage. For like the scenarios there, and he is just very, very consistent in that. He can be very predictable, you know, just depending on who you're playing with, you know, always doing the 3 to kind of guarantee that juke and stuff. But I think that because the ease of access to all those pieces to him just feels very, very strong in terms of what he can bring to the list. And like some people would say, oh, but you know, he's mainly running it with like TIE fighters, or you could put in like one Reaper and stuff. Those pieces are okay. I mean, we'll have a different conversation about the Jingoists and stuff, but that's different. They're not at the level that Vader is at. I think that Vader does need to be brought down. In terms of points, I think he's fine at 9 points, but I'm talking about maybe either removing the talent slot for Vader or reducing the loadout that he can take so that way he can't combo that Juke Malice. And an ordinance on top of that to where he can be oppressive overall.
All right. So George, what's your thoughts? We'll go to George and then before I go on my tangent.
Oh, well, mine's short and simple. If I'm getting this correct, your take is that Vader's just OP, overpowered for his point costs?
Yeah, just because he has access to both Juke and Malice currently right now, having that combination on an I6 on a chassis that regularly gets evades is really potent and, I believe, unique to that chassis and specifically Vader.
I gotcha. I agree with you in some aspects, but I'm going to disagree with you in the majority of it. I don't think Vader is overpowered. At the end of the day, he's only one ship. And one ship can't capture all of the objectives. That being said, if you are going up against a Vader, I mean, right now is the perfect time to go up against a Vader, to be honest. You just have to have a game plan. And I think if you're prepared to face that list, then you are going to do fine against a Vader list. That's my opinion of it. I just think a lot of people may not have a game plan going into a list that a lot of people are playing. So I think that makes a big difference, which would probably go into our next discussion, I imagine. So
it does. Yeah. Good call out there, George. I love it. So here we go, JJ. So you believe he's OP because he has a talent and a force slot. And then a missile and a cannon slot. And it allows him with 14 loadout points to do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
All right. So I would first challenge a few things, right? like, and I say this because, so my, so here, I guess I'll give my, the lowdown. I don't think Vader should go up in points. The only thing I think I would agree with is removing that talent slot or creating a bloody restricted list where you could just put Vader, Juke right on it. You can't take both of them.
Yes.
Keep your talent slot. Let them have, you know, let them have marksmanship. Let them have elusive, which would be actually like, if you didn't have to take Juke, I would be taking elusive on Vader every day of the week or Predator, you know?
I mean, I would guarantee people put outmaneuver on Vader every time.
All right. Okay. Well, so, all right, you're killing me here. So sure. That's a thing too. But I think the big deal becomes, it's not that Vader is OP. Like, I don't think Vader is S tier. There you go. Like, Vader is not an auto include in an Empire list. Vader is a ship that will 100% pop if you know what you're doing, will 100% pop based on dice variants, and will have a little bit higher attacking power in the consistency level, right? Like, it does have that consistency with the Juke and the Malice. And I agree, the Juke is actually the bigger issue, I think, with this, is the fact that he can roll and get a consistent 3-hit or 2 hits and a crit, no questions asked, and then on top of that, have Juke to tell you, you that if you have 3 green dice, one of them becomes a focus, right? But at the same token, as long as you have the focus, right, you whatever, he's going to roll an evade down to a focus, you can use your focus. Like, it's you still have that ability. The difference is, and this kind of goes into what George was saying, is if you understand what you have to do, if you know Vader is coming against you, right, and I'll pick on CIS just because that's what I know. If Vader does not have cluster missiles, and Vader is coming against you as a droid, and you want to land on a rock, and you're worried about the heavy laser cannon or whatever the hell he wants to throw at you, you just make sure you land towards the back of the rock so that you get the extra green dice. You make sure you always double calculate. That way you can always change 2 of your results. He can't roll it down to a blank. And then if you decide to throw your Discord missile out, which you should do to hit a Vader, which you didn't run Discord missiles, you ran energy shells. And I've changed my mind on energy shells, and I'm back to Discords when it comes to like a smaller ship count list for CIS.
I have a, it's mixed arms, you know,
Against the Vader, a Vader piece, that's where Discord getting on Vader and forcing him to no longer take that focus, and he has to take the barrel roll. He does not get a choice because Vader does not want to keep that stupid bus tray at all. So Vader either has to get in close so he can bump, or he has to barrel roll. And when you do that, you mess with Vader's consistency, right? Now, I also feel that Vader has been the boogeyman because people hate defenders. I really genuinely feel that this defender dislove just gets translated into Vader. I think people are very scared of defenders because of the 1.0 situation. I didn't experience it, so I have no idea. Like, I would say give me... I've ran 3 generic defenders and never won a game, ever. I won 3 of them, never won 1 game, ever. Every time I've ran them. Matt, who used to be on the show, was so adamant that those things are so OP. And as soon as I ran I1s at 3 of them, which you can't legally run in a list, even back in 2.0, I didn't win. Like, he destroyed me. He destroyed me because they're I1s. And yeah, they get focus evade, but he destroyed me. It wasn't even a contest. So to me, I feel that it's the pieces that you're giving Vader that allow the objectives to become more obtainable than it is himself. And I would actually even challenge, before we start taking slots and all these other things away, like, could we tweak Empire's point costs on some of these other things? So ISB Jingoist, for one, should not be 2 points at I4. It was done to sell packs, right? Like, what, or whatever you want to call it. I don't care what you want to call it, but it was done in a way to, it's silly. Like, they, at an I4, a 2-point ship is, that gives out strain almost every turn. That's pretty powerful with no repercussions. Yeah. That's pretty good. And you have an I3 or an I4 ship that can say one of my TIE fighters no longer will die automatically. every game. That's like a half of a free ship right there. And then if anybody was smart and you running Moff Gideon, which I've explained that, like, in my opinion, you run Moff Gideon, Iden, and both those Jinguas, and then you build around that list. That's what you should be doing. But Moff Gideon, I've said it before, is extremely important because it denies your rerolls, which we all know what happens when you start doing that. Look at Magma Yarvo, or however you say that stupid U-Wings pilot thing. That's really good. And that won the first, you know, or was almost like was runner up in the very first, you know, 2.5 era world. So anyway, long story short, if we go all the way back to what I was trying to get across, is I feel it's the pieces around him that I would look at first rather than looking at the Vader. Because maybe it's the list that's OP that allows Vader to run the Reaper and a bunch of TIEs, or Vader and a bunch of TIEs. Over the fact that we are getting a Vader that is a ship that's more worthwhile, right? There you go.
Thoughts. Yeah, I mean, that I do agree that the companionships to Defender Vader and most of the lists definitely have a big impact, and there's something that should not be marginalized when we're discussing whether or not Vader is overpowered or not. The impact of the Jinguas is something that we definitely can't ignore. However, if you were to replace that Jingoist with, like, let's say a Black Squadron Ace, right, which is 2 points, it's still the objective getter. It still goes in to block. It still prevents you from going in and grabbing those objectives on salvage or scramble if it's played correctly, right? Because it's a low initiative ship, high agility, that can go in, take up space, and take those objectives there. It's what you expect from a low-cost ship on the Empire that can do that and fulfill that kind of role. And that makes sense, right? The Jinguist's ability moving in I-4 is a little bit detrimental when it comes to that, because it is susceptible to being blocked. And yes, that whole mechanic of getting out stress, even at range zero, is really powerful. But I don't feel that that's, if you were to compare like the strengths in that particular list, right? You know, when you're comparing the Jinguist versus Vader, sure, the Jinguas can take up the space and, you know, still grab objectives and stuff, but they're not going to win you the game versus Vader, who can consistently push in damage. And if you're going into the, and I'm calling out salvage in particular because that's probably the most egregious example out of all the objectives, but if you're going into a game trying to compete on objectives so that way you don't fall behind in the objective race, Vader is there to punish anybody that's going after those objectives. And his consistent offense with just his force alone, we're not even talking about like adding a focus token or even a target lock to mitigate multiple blankouts. He's just really, really consistent at taking out those ships and pushing in crits that really benefit that player for that objective.
All right.
And again, I'm not going at an angle at that as saying that, you know, you bring the Defender Vader and you're going to win the tournament. Obviously not. That's no, because it really depends on the player. But I'm just saying from a negative player experience angle, like, I think that that's where it needs to be tweaked a bit.
But is it because he has Juke? Sorry, go ahead, George.
I think it's a combination of Juke. Yeah. So, and that's the part, like, with the combination of Juke and Malice and stuff like that. I can see, and I agree with you on, like, an experienced player going against a newer player, that's going to feel bad for the newer player, generally. I gotcha.
Yeah.
I mean, but is a Shattering Shot, Trick Shot, Proton Torpedo Luke with R3 Astromech so he gets two effing options better?
No, not at all. That should also be done. But it shouldn't be either or, right? It should be both. Both need to be adjusted. I absolutely agree with
that. And I'm only posing it. And the same thing. Should Boba Fett also be like no Shafe Cloud, no Force Crew, not give him Notorious and say, screw you, can't have any of these things?
That's fine. I mean, you can lower Boba's loadout value because his ability by itself, even without a crew slot to help him have a passive force, Boba's still really, really good. So I even if you take that down, you make Boba a little more fairer. Chaff Cloud, I mean, Chaff Cloud honestly is a whole other issue by itself because it affects many, many chassis that can use that in their list. But I mean, I'm okay with Boba going down and or having either slots removed or points reduced, so that way he can't have that combination of things. But yeah, I mean, anything to make the experience better for everybody across the board.
See, and this is where I would say I don't feel Vader is a negative play experience overall, right? Any more than Luke is, or any more than Boba is, or any more than Jango. I mean, you can make the same argument with a Jango Fett. You can make the same argument about a bombardment drone that you didn't know can drop a mine out the front. And here you come flying around saying, oh, whatever, I'll take a shot. Range one. Oh, by the way, you can't kill a range one bombardment drone with one ship when it's farther back on a rock. And it's just going to drop a proxy mine on you. You know, like, I mean, and then, oh, there you go. There goes your Mace Windu, who has four health and just took one immediate damage and a possibly two more. I've watched the Mace roll hit crit and then have a direct hit, and then there goes Mace. That's a feels bad, but you can't stop all that. So you have to look at what is my ratio of feels bad, right? Like, what is the consistency of that feels bad? So when I talk about like Torkoal Mux, and Torkoal Mux isn't even being ran, but the reason I hate Torkoal Mux so much is for the pure fact that he says your ship who's an initiative this is no longer that. He's violating some of the rules of the game to some extent. Juke is not. Juke is for everybody that has a talent slot. Now, defenders happen to get a free evade, and we only care about it because it's on Vader, who can then use malice to do that. So the next question I have is, could you, if you dropped all loadout points from Vader and said the only way you could get loadout points is if you take the elite title, which is a spicy take because I think you can give 20 loadout points if you could take the elite title. Yeah. But if you got rid of everything, so you just basically said Vader Defender gets zero loadout points, do you feel he's still OP and still a negative play experience?
I think he'll be less of a negative player experience because in your example, and just to make sure I understand the way you're saying, so you're saying that he would essentially get everything that he has now currently in terms of slots and loadout points only if he comes equipped with the elite title, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. In that case, the negative play experience would go down lower because now you have to make a conscious attempt to take the evade action as your action to trigger Juke. And that will essentially turn off your double tap ability unless you somehow get coordinated and get that done ahead of time. And it takes a lot more work to make that combo pay off more and in effect make that particular combo a lot more stronger because you get two shots. But it requires a lot more resources in order for that Vader to work. And it also makes Vader a lot more vulnerable defensively by not having that that automatic evade every single time on it. Now, that being said, is Vader super defensible? Absolutely not. He was actually, if you concentrate fire on him, just like George said before, he can go down pretty easily, you know, with bad dice variants. But you kind of have to really count on that and consistently in order for you to chew through all of Vader's health, because that is seven health on three dice, and she usually has a focus and an evade on his part. By adding that the Ty Elite piece, he's not getting that automatic evade, which reduces both his offense and defensive potential if he's not getting coordinated consistently. And that's, while he still has the potential to have a high damage spike, if you remove some of those pieces around it, or you have that ship dedicating itself solely to backing up Vader, then it's
all right. So
I would say it's a lot less feel bad than.
So how about this? Let's forget about the elite piece for a second. And let's just say Defender Vader gets zero loadout points. Is he a feel bad anymore?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. What if I give him 3 points so he could take Shattering Shot?
It wouldn't work because of his ability, but sure, that's fine.
Okay, what is he taking? Malice. Sorry. Malice. What if I give him 6 points and let him take Malice? Is it 6 points? It's only 4 points.
It's 4 points, yeah.
So he gets 4 points, can take malice. Still a feel bad?
With an automatic evade? Probably not, because you have a better chance on defense at that point.
So then we've isolated the one feel bad experience to Juke. So you're telling me Juke.
If you remove his four slot and still give him Juke, still better, because you have less of a chance of pushing in those crits to regenerate his force for future attacks. So that also is true. That would also reduce his feel bads as well.
So you could take either slot away and then give him enough points to take whichever stupid upgrade Vader wants to take.
Yes, he would still be good, but in my opinion, his feel bad level will be significantly down at that point.
So to me, what I feel we've isolated is not that Vader needs to be nerfed. Vader just needs a slot taken away or points lowered to allow you to take one of the two upgrades.
Yeah. Okay. I would agree. Yeah.
What, like to 12 points maybe? I don't know. Like, what are you thinking?
Well, if Malice is 6 and or Malice is 4 and Juke is 6, you have to lower him to 9. You have to put him at 9 points.
And that
feels
even worse. I don't think he's a problem. I think he's fine.
Yeah.
Would you still consider taking him though with 9 points?
Yes. Personally.
I wouldn't even do the Defender Vader. I think the other X1's better.
Yeah,
me personally. That's just my opinion, though.
There you go. Deslin said they feel that Malice Juke is fine, just no HLC. I agree with that. That if you took the cannon slots away, unless they took the elite title, how about this? Take the cannon and missile slots away, unless they take the elite title. I'm probably okay with that, actually, on Vader only, because that.
Yeah, on Vader, but yeah, the other defenders sort of need that cannon slot.
Yes,
yeah.
They do. Like,
absolutely.
The defenders should have. Okay, yes, but like I agree. Like, fine. So really, if the feels bad is Juke and Malice together, then we have the problem. If the feels bad is the cannon slot that gives you the four dice plus the Juke and Malice, then okay, then you can tweak this with a loadout, because okay, and the same thing. Think about it this way. Instead of getting rid of any slots, if you had 9 points, that would allow you to take Malice, but not HLC. You couldn't take any cannon, but Jamie.
All
right. But you could take Malice and what did I say? Malice? No, you could take Juke. No, you could take Malice and HLC for 8 points, which then still allows you to have the feels bad, right? Like,
it's not too bad at that point, mainly because you can't have any crits on HLC. Everything gets knocked down to a hit. So, I mean, kind of counterintuitive there, but I mean, it does give you a 4-dice shot at range if you line it up. I mean,
okay. So, and again, and I try to be as open as I can. I'm in the George camp, though. I just genuinely don't think Vader Defender is the bigger issue here. I genuinely think that the bigger issue in the long run of things could be a few loadout points changes, or let's get rid of a talent slot or the force slot. I don't care which, personally. I don't even run Vader Defender. And I ran it for like 2 weeks, and then I was like, this is boring. I'm going to not run this. I think the bigger thing is what you can surround him with. And I disagree a little bit, because I still think you could take your Black One Squadron, which would be very thematic. They're 2 points, but they're not an ISB Jingoist. They're not an I-4, they're an I-3. That does, if we talk about what's common in the meta, I-3 is your average lowest initiative for the most part in this meta, unless you're Finn and you're the god of hell. At an I-2. And so I really just think the bigger question and the bigger thing is if we tweaked what surrounds Vader, would we see Vader as much in competitive play versus just having fun with him? And B, if you're a new player and you're playing against a veteran player and the veteran player breaks out Darth Vader Defender, and yes, I'm talking to you, Ken, and you play a brand new player with Darth Vader Defender, you created the MPE, not Darth Vader Defender. You were the one that did that. not Vader Defender, buddy. And it's just a little joke. Ken, if Ken watches this, he'll laugh. He's helping me with Michigan GT, and he loves Defenders. Like, that's his favorite ship in the whole game.
It's a cool ship. Yeah, definitely.
It is. It really is. Yeah.
It looks cool. Anyway, so, all right, last thoughts on Vader Defender, because I feel like we've won JJ over. I feel like JJ came in hot and heavy, ready to ban Vader Defender, ready to say, F this, no, like, F this noise, man. Mm-mm, I'm done with this.
I said adjust.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we've won you over to the side of, really, it's more what goes around him and a little bit of his loadout costs that allow him to be the menace that he is. And again, I would still challenge, I don't feel he breaks the game that much. Like, I don't think, you know, we could talk Chafe Clouds if you really want to. It feels like a waste because we already did that. But we could talk Chafe Clouds because a lot of people, specifically Jeremy Chamberlain, who I believe isn't he a Crate Cup guy? Like, is like adamantly anti Chafe Clouds and think they should be banned. And I'm like, I don't know about that. Like,
no.
I'm not for that. I don't like banning things. I do think FFG doesn't always consider all of the things that can be played with it, right? I do agree that I don't know if FFG was always the best playtester, if we call it that, when they created things. But I don't know. Like, I have not heard about these crazy things from AMG with like my Marvel Crisis Protocol. When something crazy happens, they typically take care of it pretty quickly. And them not taking care of Vader kind of means to me that this isn't as crazy of a idea that I think people just want to hate Defenders. I think that's really what it is. And people wanted to hate Vader Defender before he existed. Like, it was a thing before. Like, when did we get that released?
Oof. It came in the Sky Strike Academy pack. That was last year.
Yeah. Was that before we started podcasting or after?
Probably right after.
Okay. Because there was a certain individual on this podcast that did playtesting who can announce that they did playtesting for Defender Vader, and that was that OP in our playtesting. But it also didn't get Juke. You know, so there's that.
Yeah.
It's fine. Everything's fine here.
All right. Can we just gloss over this? Next week, our discussion with D on Defender Vader. Yeah, there you go. Maybe you'll have a buddy in D. I don't know.
I think you'll be more in your camp, honestly.
Yeah. I'm a little more conservative, I think, when it comes to those things. I like restricted lists a lot, just so you know. I'm a big proponent of restricted lists. All right, let's transition. So for those who have just joined us, and if you're new, and I say this for the replay mainly, if you've just joined Planning Face Syndicate, we are currently in the middle of a conversation about comparing chess to X-Wing. And a little history on that is the idea behind this kind of came from a buddy of mine who used to podcast with us. His name is Matt. And Matt was always a big chess fan. I played chess with Matt since I was in high school. Just so everybody knows, I've been friends with Matt since high school. And we played a lot of chess together, especially when we were bored and couldn't drink or do drugs. So there was that. And chess was always kind of been a thing. And so when we got into competitive board gaming together, he compared X-Wing to chess. And originally I kind of dismissed it. And I said, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. Chess is dumb, but it's not really dumb. Chess is actually a really amazing game that there's a lot of strategy that goes into, which I'm learning even more about, having to understand that there is so many opening maneuvers. It's insane. It's crazy. We are not going to go over every opening chess maneuver, by the way. We are definitely not doing that. That would be boring. That would be for a chess podcast that we are not. But the idea came is that when we talk about X-Wing, what is the closest strategic board game you can compare it to that's nationally or widely known? And chess is one of that. So what I wanted to do is create a series, especially for people that want to learn about X-Wing strategy and talk through a lot of the different pieces that go along with chess strategy and how it relates to X-Wing strategy. So I believe in our journey, we've spent a lot of time defining things, which is the Tanner thing, just so you know. I spend a lot of time doing that for work. So it's probably transitioning into the podcast a little bit more than maybe it should. But we have spent a couple of weeks talking about what chess theory is, what are the different, you know, scenarios, the different principles of it. And then we're finally now getting into the meat and bones of it. So we started with chess theory and discussing what different pieces kind of go together. So there's three phases: opening, mid-game, end-game. Those are your three phases. Then you have what we would call the principles of chess theory, which there is, I can't remember what was it. There's five principal theories of chess theory: material count, piece activity, pawn structure, the space, and king safety. Those are your five main principles that encompass all of chess theory. Then what we decided to do is tonight we're going to be talking about opening theory. And there's a whole, like, that's like the biggest piece to chess theory is the opening maneuvers, the opening setup, how you want to create it, all these different things. So what I thought I'd do, and this is what we're going to do, is we're going to talk a little bit about opening theory. We're going to talk about the six principles of opening theory. And then we're going to actually say, what is opening theory in relation to X-Wing? Because it is sure as hell, based on when we defined all of our pieces, not protecting the king, because there's not very many kings in X-Wing, as we've discovered over the course of the last three episodes. Two episodes? Has it been two or three? I don't know how many episodes we've done this. All right. So let's define chess opening theory. Is a position that has been explored with a set established moves and explores why these moves are made. You then have what's called a novelty, which is a move that was previously unknown in chess theory by either neither being played or by neither being studied. So it's basically like a new revelation. And I'll give an example. Crispy's list, where he has the two FO bombers, Kylo with the Whisper, and two TIE FOs, was kind of a new revelation into the meta. That was a weird FO salad that, with all the toys and pieces, worked very well together. And then Crispy developed the novelty of how you move those pieces together and how you go about it. The one caveat to this is what they would call a setup slash system, which is a set of moves that can be played against any list. These essentially are different from a theory. So if we talk about a setup or we talk about a chess system, it is essentially something that is defined where people play the exact same moves, no matter what, who they're playing, whatever the opponent plays or how the opponent's playing. They don't change it. They play it exactly the same. Which is probably Vader Defender. Like, if we're going to just be honest, Vader Defender, like, is that part of that system. So it doesn't matter what objective Vader Defender plays. He doesn't pick up the objective. And he doesn't go for objectives. He only goes to murder things and give you a negative play experience, according to JJ, who must have had two of them this weekend at Grey Cup. So
I actually played five different Vaders. Killed two of them, though.
See, and that's the power of Boba and Eamon. Anyway.
Yes.
So, and Kanan. Kanan does work.
Yeah, mainly Kanan. Yes, Kanan. Yep.
But I would consider that list to not be a system setup, because you are not doing the exact same maneuvers with that list, no matter who you play against. That list is extremely versatile in that you could run Boba Eamon together, because it's a smaller list set. You could be separating them because, you know, you need to bomb certain pieces of it to get more points. There's a whole set to that that list style, which we're going to get into. So just so everybody's aware, like, the idea here is we're building up to having conversations about objectives. I'm taking this a little slower just because I think the objectives might get changed again in October, and I don't want to redo those segments. Just so everybody knows, that's how this whole thing occurred. All right. So now we got to talk about the opening, what I would call the six opening theory principles for chess. Develop your piece. Control the center of the board will control the game. Coordinate your pieces to maximize their potential. Protect your king, obviously. Do not bring your king out too early, unless it's part of your maneuver. And don't blunder, which is just a silly rule or principle that I thought was the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life. So let's talk a little bit about this. JJ, we'll start with JJ. What do you feel develop your piece means?
Well, develop your piece is making sure that your piece is set up in a place where it can be at its maximum efficiency to come in and do it. To do what they do best. Let's take, for instance, General Grievous. It's a ship that everybody knows very well. Recently in the meta, one of the most common configurations for General Grievous is outmaneuver, right? So typically that means that we have that particular piece. You want to set up your Grievous in a way that you're set up to take the flank on another enemy ship to get the maximum benefit from Grievous's potential. Grievous' natural ability is to get rerolls if he's flanking the enemy ship that he's attacking. And if you combine that with outmaneuver, you get an even bigger hit on that particular target. That's what makes Grievous that much of a great flanking piece in your Separatist list for it. So when we're talking about developing your piece, it's just making sure that you set up that piece to come in at an angle where you can maximize his effectiveness by coming in either through the rear of the opponent's list or through the sides, so that way he can help start eliminating some of those targets for the rest of your list to do what they need to do in that position.
George, how about you? What do you feel develop your piece mean? What does that mean to you when I tell you that?
Well, in X-Wing, I kind of relate it more to what your list is. What your list consists of in the first place, so like all your cards, what you're putting on General Grievous, for example, if you're going to go without maneuver in the first place, or you're going to put something else on, an Afterburners, whatever, Predator, other different upgrades on your list, and then know what they do so that you remember as the game goes on what the triggers you're going to have to remember. So that's what it kind of means to me, basically.
All right. So the way that they describe it is essentially is the idea of getting your pieces to mid game, right? So if you watch Nickel City and watch me lose a droid in the first engagement to a Han with only a Rey mod, you would understand that I obviously failed very hardcore at getting my droid to the mid game phase because he didn't get to shoot a Discord missile. He didn't get to shoot nothing. He just died. Now, some of that's a dice variance thing. But still, I didn't need to even put him at range 3 of Han. I range 2 of Han. I could have kept him back a little bit farther, which would have been the smarter move, versus the Tanner who just likes to throw all his shit in the middle and just say, let's roll dice. I like that a little bit more, I think. Anyway, so essentially, you're developing your minor pieces. That's what you're trying to do, right? And you're making sure that you're creating a safety net for whatever piece you need. So you're setting up essentially your internal play method, right? The next one is controlling the center. So I'll throw it out there if anybody wants to commentate on it. I think we don't control the center in X-Wing per se, but I think at the exact same time we do, because there's an objective in the center. And we either want to keep people out of that center or in the center, one of the two. So, for example, an A-Wing list wants to avoid the center when people are dropping mines through there or bombs. But there, that's a knobby reference there. But if you have a bunch of Y-Wings from Resistance, you want to circle that center to drop your stuff to force your opponent to not be able to go anywhere or do anything so you can control them and nest them into it. So I think it's a little bit different. But what does control the center mean to you, George?
Know what the objectives are, I think, is the key factor there. So, if you have to if it's assault and you have to keep, you know, you have to keep a ship within range one of an objective, you, that's your objective, that's what you got to do. Make sure that you have a couple of pieces to take care of those zones, but at the same time, you know, trying to prevent your opponent from getting to their zones, or, you know, doing what you can to stop that from happening.
JJ?
Yeah, I definitely agree with George. For me, you know, it's because of the 2.5 objectives, every scenario has a centerpiece, which in most games, that's where you're basing, where you're placing your obstacles, right? You're always measuring how far you're placing your objectives from that centerpiece, and the more closer you're placing your objectives to the center, that's going to determine the circle, how wide that circle of the center is. When you consider the objectives like assault on satellite array, which is the area control, it is possible to stay in the center and hit 2 points, and controlling that piece throughout the game to control those 2 points is something that's very, very big. And you want your list to either be very good at controlling that center, setting yourself up for that, or making sure you deny your opponent even if you're not able to control that center, and make sure that they don't take that benefit from you or use it against you in the game.
Yeah, a lot of this comes from before the game even begins too. So like you can use rock placements as a form of control as well.
Yep, fair enough. And a lot of what they talk about in chess theory is controlling piece mobility and flexibility, taking advantage of your opponent, influencing the game for your positions, right? And attacks that build towards a more decisive advantage. So the next one is coordinate your pieces to maximize the potential. Do you think in chess, like, a rook can coordinate a knight, an extra move? Is that a thing?
No, but in chess speak, it's probably just ensuring that you set up moves ahead of time for your other bigger pieces to come in and be effective. Like, for instance, like moving up the knight's pawn up so that way you leave a path for either the bishop to move out to come out and kind of help engage in the center. Or you can move the bishop's pawn to help the queen come out and help out and take out and threaten different pieces on the board. I think that's what they make that relationship.
George?
Yeah, kind of similar in that aspect. You can also set up like a good old-fashioned bait and switch. It's a little bit harder to do in chess, I would say, but maybe in X-Wing you can maybe put your pawn out there as sort of a bait, knowing that even if he dies, you're setting up that it's that, you know, when your opponent is focusing in on that pawn, you can maximize with the Grievous coming in from the flank again and, like, you know, positioning in a much better advantageous spot, basically.
Yep. So essentially, they coordinating your pieces is claiming space on the board to control key spaces that your opponent would want. That's essentially on a high level what they're trying to do. And it's to slow down the progress of your opponent being able to come in and take control of vital areas that you would want. And I think that's exactly right, right? You know, the flanking mentality, which I think is a good point that we should be adding to what we're going to talk about in a minute. But that flanking mentality is, if I put Grievous on the right side and Jango on the left side, who do you want? Pick. I could set them up to begin with that way, and you could set your whole list up, and you have to pick what you want. And I will tell you, and George, you could tell me maybe this is a trap, but I'll put Grievous on the left side, and I'll put Jango towards the middle, right? And what'll happen is all of a sudden I see an I5 and I6 line up over here in front of Grievous. Are you going to joust them with Grievous?
It depends on your opponent.
Okay, if they have a Poe, let's say they have a Poe and Azizi. I don't know. Poe and Azizi. You going to joust Poe and Azizi with a Grievous?
Not likely.
Okay. You're going to take them and say, fine, you want to come get me? I'm going to dart to the right, because I'm going to put a Grievous on the left, because that's my favorite part of the board to put Grievous on is the left. I'm going to dart to the right and shoot up the center behind my Jango Fett. So I'm going to let my Jango Fett go in there and say, hey, folks, I'm the same eye as you, initiative as you, and we get to roll for who gets to go first here, baby. and doesn't mean you're going to win that. And then I'm going to have my Grievous come back in and flank you. And it's the same way as if I set Grievous up over here and Jango Fett over here, and all of a sudden everybody goes in on Jango. Here comes Grievous, five straight, three bank boost, you know, that type of thing to come in and outmaneuver you to get my shots to try and murder you. Protect your king. That's the next one. I think this is a really quick and simple one, and you guys can either agree or disagree, and we can talk about it. But to me, there isn't a king, very many kings in chess, or in X-Wing very often. So really, it's your win condition. What is your main win condition, and how do you protect that? And if your main win condition is taking objectives and stalemating so that you don't lose ships all the time, or is your main win condition taking your list and, you know, taking one objective or two objective and then murdering things, you know, but controlling your win condition to allow it to succeed, to me, is the protect your king of X-Wing. What is your guys' thoughts?
Well, I think that in X-Wing, you know, just thinking back to like our discussion for like what pieces are kings and, you know, not really identifying any kings. I think that the king...
Except for Vader, that, according to you.
Well, I've actually won a game for killing that piece. But anyway, I think the king role kind of is a fluid concept in X-Wing, right? Because it does vary from list to list, and it does vary on the situation for it, right? So there will be times where you could be ahead on objective points and you can have a high-value ship, like a seven-pointer, for instance, that could be on the verge of dying and flipping the tables and giving your opponent an advantage. At that point, that particular piece, when it's vulnerable to being destroyed, now becomes that king that you need to protect and make sure that you keep him alive at all costs so that way you can, in essence, protect your win condition, either by like passive points from objectives, or taking out your opponent's pieces who are also vulnerable, essentially taking out your opponent's king in that case. And I think that's how that translates into X-Wing.
George?
Yeah, I'm kind of in that same boat. Protecting your king, to me, kind of means two things, right? Like, obviously, you have that big piece that if you lose, you could possibly lose the game. But your king could also be that win condition. So once you see that win condition and you go for it, like you're in the lead or something like that, like you want to maintain that win alive, basically. So if you got to bug out, you bug out. And that's pretty much what JJ was saying, basically.
Yep. The next one is don't bring your queen out too early. I think that's, yeah, we talked about queens. There's a lot of queens in X-Wing. I think I agree with that. Like, if you're going to, like, I think Luke at 6 points is a queen that you can trade, right? Like, you could trade Luke if, as long as Luke gets double his points value or 1.5 worth of it. Like, as long as he's getting 9 value out of him, you could trade your queen. But you don't give Luke up without taking something out. And no offense, there's a gentleman at Gen Con I played with my Boba Eamon Kanan list, where Luke was on this side of the screen, Boba's over here, and here comes Luke. One proton shot is all they got off on Boba. One. And it was not shattering shot or trick shot, which they had, was not out there. And, you know, the proton shot did 2 damage to Boba, which was 2 shields, and then Boba promptly said, bump, 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 oh, here we go, Luke, you really, yep. Come on, come here, baby. Like, you know, like, I'm just going to keep eating you. And that, in the end, it was a bad trade for that. That was a mistake. They shouldn't have gone after Boba. They should have come closer to the center and used their concentrated shot on Eamon, because that would have gotten them Eamon at least at half points, if not possibly permanently killed, because it's Eamon and he don't live. They don't live like Boba lives.
Very much.
Yeah. Eamon does not like proton torpedo shots at all. And I don't like putting shave clouds on Eamon. I don't get it. I like Eamon for his ability. I don't care what anybody says. That's just like my favorite thing about Eamon. Here's a proxy. 3 heart. Baby. Anyway. Oh, I should play Skill Bombardier on Eamon even more. It'd be even more fun.
Yeah, but you can't do a four hard turn.
I know, because they don't exist. But if they did, it would be so much fun. Can you imagine if they created an errata? I'm just going to tangent. If you create an errata where you could just add the one after it. Oh, my God.
No. Oh. No. Insta-ban. Yum, 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 yum. I'm a bomber by heart, but insta-ban. Gosh, no.
Yeah. No three. No get four hearts. No four hearts.
A four bank. Imagine. Chef. No. Hell no.
Anyway. All right. Anything else for don't bring your queen out too early?
Yeah, and the other part of it too is like understanding which pieces that do want to get up there early and go in there, and versus pieces that don't want to do that. Especially just depending on your deployment, right? Like if you have a one-on-one situation where you have a fairly good chance for your ship to come out on top in a fire exchange, then at that point, yes, go ahead and do it. You know, take the chance to do it. But if you're a single ship and you're going to joust like four heavy ships that are coming in with ordnance like straight ahead of you, that's probably not going to work out for you for the joust, you know? And yeah. And I think that's a skill in identifying those situations that for like newer players, they have to kind of develop to understand that that even though you might have a really good three agility ship, your green dice will betray you, especially with multiple shots. And going straight into a joust early in the beginning of the game versus multiple ships is usually a very, very bad idea. So,
fire spray reinforces your friend. I hate reinforcing, but I know it would save my life. And the other thing is, don't leave your Grievous to bait Vader unless you know you can kill Vader. It is not a good trade. Vader will eat your Grievous every time, as JJ knows.
Yep.
Four dice. I couldn't believe that. Sorry. I just couldn't believe like the frustration of JJ throwing his cards down. Boom. 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 You just see how angry you were on stream. It was hilarious. It was like, there's an angry JJ. I can see it. Yeah. JJ's getting tilted.
Yeah, I there were a couple of times I got tilted. I was like, damn. But then, you know, it happens, man. It happens.
All right, the last one was don't blunder. That's the equivalent of fly better. Like I see that as the stupidest principle. I don't know why anybody would put that in there. In, I guess, pay attention to your opponent. Sure, that makes sense. It's really, to me, this one should say, not that, but should actually say, understand what your opponent's trying to do. That's what I feel. That last one is.
I actually understand as a little bit different. I think in this case, as it relates to X-Wing, is double check yourself all the time. I can't tell you how many times, especially running, you know, multiple of the same chassis, where you accidentally set a dial for one particular ship and then assign it to the wrong ship. And then when you reveal it, you're going the wrong way of where you intended to, because that dial was meant for a different ship. Taking the time, especially in the heat of the moment, to like just double check where you're going, right? Double check your dials, make sure that you dialed in correctly, instead of trying to rush to like get through the round or take your shot, is a skill that is so invaluable. I mean, I've personally flown ships off the mat because I didn't check my dial. It is what it is, but it does happen.
Yeah, I'll give you one too. I had a game where I was going against the FO bomber list, Crispy's list. And I had my Jango right behind one of the bombers. And in my head, I was like, well, this isn't a bad spot. I have the back arc. I can shoot the bomber, no problem. And then drop a proxy right on him the next round. Well, I forgot. Initiative is a thing. And you make mistakes. You make mistakes sometimes. You know that at system phase, that initiative 2 is going to go before your Jango, and he's going to drop the bomb before you do. So yeah. That's the thing. Just pay attention.
And that's fair. I mean, I think I had a similar thing where I brought a bombardment drone in and took an objective because I felt behind, and then thought, it's 5 health, I'm not going to die. And then 2 very well-placed shots later, one from an aggressive Poe, which did 3 damage, and one from a Han, which did 2 damage, I no longer had a bombardment drone to kill Han with the next turn. So yeah. And you just, certain things you don't think about ahead of time, like there was zero reason you couldn't just take and double calculates, kept not taking the objective, because in the long run, Han's worth more points than the objective is. So, yeah. All right. So now what I wanted to do with the rest of the time that we have together, and folks, we will not be 11 o'clock tonight. This is not going to be an 11 o'clock show. This will be, we are going to work to be done at 10:30 because, exciting news, we're going to do a extended universe episode where we talk about Andor at 11:30.
Very excited.
We are definitely doing that. George, you're welcome to stay on if you want. You don't have to if you don't want to. I'm so excited by Andor. You have no idea. I really want to talk about it, especially with people that are a little bit more into lore than I am. They smoke less pot than I do, so they remember things better than I do. So there's that type of thing. Yeah. But anyway, long story short, what I wanted to do was talk about, okay, we talked about chess theory, opening theory. We got to talk about X-Wing opening theory. And I'm going to lay out the scenario here. X-Wing opening theory involves a lot of different things. It doesn't just involve once you start the game. Like, to me, opening theory in chess is pretty easier to identify because you set up the exact same way every time, no questions asked. There is literally no other way you could set up your chess board other than the prescribed way. X-Wing is not that way. And so I will give a little secret away for those of you who haven't played very long. Obstacle placement is one of the top priorities of opening theory for X-Wing. And I'll be honest, that is my weakest, that is 100% my weakest personal point is obstacle placement. Like 100%, I will just openly admit that is definitely like a key piece. So anybody locally watching that would like to either beat me or train me how to do it better for our team event that we're all going to in December, hint, hint, that is the piece that Tanner needs a lot of work on that I definitely do not get right every time, especially with freaking gauntlets. Like, anyway, hey, let's put an obstacle right in the middle so the 2 droids can land on it. And then, oh, by the way, Bo-Katan and Pre Vizsla don't know how to get around it. Anyway, so let's talk about what would be our opening theory principles for X-Wing. And I'm going to start with George. I'm going to pick on George, and George has to go first for this. So what is your number one opening principle for developing X-Wing theory, Dr. George?
Well, I don't know if this is going to be on your list.
You can see on my screen there is no list. It's question marks. So
okay.
We're building this, baby. We're building this together.
It's something you can't really do in chess, because in chess you're always going to have the same pieces. But I think a really solid opening theory principle is bringing the right list. Your list choice, basically.
Yeah.
All right.
And
good one.
What makes that? What do you think? Like, so can you elaborate a little bit on it? Like, you know,
right?
How does it affect you versus bringing like the wrong list?
Well, there's always going to be a meta, and you have to understand the meta. So I think part of that goes into researching what the meta is, and understanding what the strengths of the meta is, and what the weaknesses are. So, for example, if you know you're going to go up against, a Vader list, for example, then bring a list that could be strong against that. If that's a list that you really fear, then you bring a list that can maybe counter that list. Just in general, just fly the best list you can. FO is really strong right now. Fly the FO list. Republic lists are really strong right now. Resistance is super strong. And then find the best list within those factions and, you know, be prepared for what you're going to face, basically.
All right. JJ, What about you? What's your top one?
The kind of in the same vein as George, know your opponent's list. Now, for a newer player, that's a little bit more difficult because if you're coming into the game for the first time, you're obviously not going to get to understand like every single possible interaction with most of these lists. You're not going to understand most of the pilots that's going to come in for the list. But taking the time to read the cards, asking questions for your opponents, especially if it's in a casual setting, so that way you can understand when some of those pilot abilities trigger or how some of the upgrades interact with the abilities that trigger. For instance, Defender Vader with Juke just helps the player prepare themselves and not be caught off guard when they're playing that list later on in the game, right? For instance, like if you see Vader set up on the flank and you have a particular ship on the flank, then you know Vader's going to come in to get the first shot in there, you know, rather than a possible reposition, which may not precisely help you to get out of the reach of Vader. Take that focus token because you're going to know that that juke is going to come and you are probably going to need that token to help mitigate that that change to your defensive dice and help you prevent damage down the line. So I think like taking the time to review your opponent's list before you actually start the game helps you arm you with information to make better decisions as the game goes along.
And I agree with you. I think that's actually so when you say, hey, not all new players are going to know this, and that's very true. But understanding if you were a new player, that would be something you would want to work on or work towards is a benefit. And I would say if you read any of the opening chess theory blogs or books, there's actually quite a few books, by the way. I've only read one, just so you know. One. There's so many of these damn things. But anyway, like they actually talk about that as a new player, you may not be able to focus on every one of the opening principles, but you should be able to focus on a few of them and understand how the different interactions work. Because if you just understand the setup system aspect that we talked about with, you know, essentially how a list just does exactly the same thing every time, you're not actually considering the theory behind how everything interacts and works together. And I think, you know, like here again, this is no shame. Like I will admit I have a lot of growth to do as a player in understanding all of these opening mechanics. In the chat, we had, somebody named Axiom post, know the scope of ability and loadouts.
Super strong.
Yeah. So I think that's very viable, right? Like understanding what all the different abilities do and what all the loadouts do, and how can you create an interactive list that will interact with your environment on a positive nature. So I think that's a great one. I'm going to put that down. Anybody else want to elaborate?
Well, know your scope of ability, right? So, like, me, for example, like, the very first time I played the Separatist list, I didn't do so hot, right? Because I didn't take the time to, like, fully understand what all my stuff did. I was kind of learning as I was playing, and that's not the right way to play. Like, obviously, you're learning as you go. That was a practice game. But, like, in an actual tournament, that's not how you want to show up. So if it's a competitive like environment, you want to be already prepared and know your list like through and through, so that the only thing you have to worry about when you're there is knowing basically picking up what your opponent is going to like what your opponent is doing. You already know your list by memory.
Yeah. Very solid. How about another one? What's another one? JJ, hit me with another one.
Know your objectives, right? A lot of people, when they're playing these scenario objectives, they tend to just generalize it. For instance, chance engagement, control the center, scramble. You've got three objectives that you got to take an action and just place them nilly-willy. Salvage, just place five obstacles on the board and try to get them. Those are very general descriptions for it, but you have to be able to recognize what exactly is how your list is going to react to those particular scenarios and formulate a strategy to how to try to come up on top for it. Some objectives are a little more easier than others, just depending on what your list is. And I'll use my particular list that I use for Krayt Cup, something that I've been using for a while now, my double fire spray and in Kanan list, which is a hawk. That particular list does not like salvage mission, because I understand that if I'm facing off against other lists that have a higher ship count, it is more difficult for me to capture those particular objectives on the board and hold on to them than my opponent has. My opponent has more ships, therefore can use more of those ships to go grab those objectives, and puts the onus on me to try to get those ships off the board, or at least make them drop their objectives, so that way they don't constantly score points on that particular scenario. So understanding that helps me place those scenario objectives on turn zero in a way that benefits me, where I can place them more towards the center where I want that area of engagement with my list, so that way I can punish that particular ship that may try to come for that particular salvage token. And that way I can try to prevent them from getting those points by either eliminating the ship or making them suffer a critical damage from my attacks. And that's how I try to mitigate that. Other ships, for instance, like the Separatist list, a lot of them that run droids, usually tend to suffer a little bit in chance engagement, mainly because they are very fragile and they're easy to, they can blow up very easily. Running them into the center of the objective and getting blown up by particular potential bombs or very accurate shots, probably not the best way to go in. You want to try to set them up in different areas and try to control that, and so that way you can try to best get that advantage in the game.
Oh yeah, and with that, like, understanding the types of obstacles they and what they do. When you're selecting your obstacles, right, like to bring, you want to bring obstacles that are going to be stronger towards your list, or, you know, they have a purpose. So, like, for example, my droids, you know, they like debris and asteroids. That's fine. They can land on them, but they don't like gas clouds. In a situation where I might bring a gas cloud, it could be somebody who has, this is just something I like to do, for example. If I'm using the child on a ship, for example, I might be enticed to bring those gas clouds just to get those target locks off of me. I might run over the gas cloud on purpose just to get those target locks off of whoever has the child.
Yep. So the next one that I was going to say, basically what George was saying, is the obstacle placement. Where do you want to place your obstacles to help you develop lanes based on what your list wants to do? So I fly Separatists a lot, so for me, the lanes are a little bit less important for what I want to do, and more important for where I want my opponents to go, right? So especially if I got the new weird long obstacle debris cloud that you can have, I can land two droids comfortably on that thing.
Oh yeah.
And I can also use that obstacle to place in between two objectives and land my droid in the center and pick up both those in assault. I will say droids love assault at the satellite array. That is like their favorite. I don't care what anyone says. That is their favorite, especially with Jango Fett, or even without Jango Fett, just with droids. That's like their favorite scenario, because they just sit there. You have to go kill them then. And then you know where your opponent's going to be. So if you can get there faster, you can set up faster. The best part is especially if you're running against a three-ship list, you know how many three-ship lists I've shot a Discord missile at? And then I get really angry because they just shoot the Discord missile that hit them because I put it in the front. But then I always fail to forget. That's one less four-die shot coming into my droid. That's one less four-die shot coming into that droid that they just got rid of for one calculate and 4 points. Like, all right, I think I did my job here, you know? So I think obstacle placement is great, George, like you were saying, and you have to know what will benefit you versus harm you. And I will challenge And I think that's a good point, George, with the non-debris clouds and your gas clouds. I have been thinking about with droids, especially with a smaller droid list that does not land on the obstacles. What if I just brought all gas clouds? Because
that's interesting, yeah.
I'm not going to sit on them.
Right, right. That's not your plan, so it makes sense, yeah.
Yep, and I can position them where if I have somebody like a Luke with a shattering shot trick shot coming through, I can fly right through those or land right on that gas cloud, and yeah, I might not get a shot, but you can't kill me, or hopefully you can't kill me, because I'm going to get an extra dice, and you're going to not be able to target lock me, you know? But I think it's an interesting discussion because droids typically want to sit on rocks. And how often, I don't know, I've been running your list a little bit more often. And how often do I not sit on an obstacle with one of those droids? A lot, actually. Like, unless it's very important to get that objective right there, I have not been sitting on an obstacle because it's just like I could move around. But why sit here? You know, I'm not going to score any points sitting here. So there's zero reason to sit here.
Yeah.
Anyway, just my 2 cents.
I've had to get my droids off of rocks just to chase people down sometimes, you know, and come around, swing around the corner and make sure that I get those discords on at the right time.
Yeah, especially because even with an independent calculate, it doesn't matter because you're not sharing, but you could do a 2-straight barrel roll calculate for stress. You just get one less calculate. But you still shoot your discord missile and, oh, by the way, I just went 2 forward and to the right. It's, yeah. You know what that move is? You know what that move is? It's a knight move.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's right.
2 forward, 1 to the right.
Yep.
I'm sorry. You love this chest a little too much. All right, what else? What else, folks, goes into opening theory principles for X-Wing?
I'll jump in here. This is a big battle plan. Have a battle plan versus... certain list types that you know people are going to run. So like, just again, like me, I love facing Vader list. This is just an example. The way that I defeat Vader list is by not going after Vader and going after those ties. And even with an Iden, you can still, I'm pretty sure you can still do enough damage to kill at least a TIE fighter every single round until Vader's left with nothing. So, like, at the end of the game, it's a little harder to do with the chance engagement, but every other scenario, you shouldn't have any problem, because Vader can't capture objectives by himself. So,
yeah, agreed. The other part I would say would be a good setup strategy is understand your spacing. In this applies specifically with like large counts, or large, list counts of ships. I should word that better. Basically if you're running like 6, 7, or 8, ships in your list, spacing is very, very important, for your list. And I'll pick on, the Separatist drones for this one here. A lot of people try to put the drones as close as possible together, so that way they could fit onto a single rock and try to get all the benefits from like having that obstruction piece for it. But what they don't factor a lot of times is that when you're trying to rotate your droids, if the nubs end up overlapping, then you could end up failing that rotation because the nubs do count for that rotation. So understanding to give yourself enough space in between ships, so that way when you're doing more like different maneuvers that are run down the line, or even like, for instance, the TIE fighters that like to fly in a group together, giving that proper spacing so that way when they do bank maneuvers, they can end up shifting just enough to bump into their friendly ship, causing them damage and denying them actions. Understanding that spacing when you're moving is a very big thing, and that's something that you have to start from the beginning in turn zero when you're placing your ships. And understanding that spacing in between your ships is very, very critical when flying.
So the next one I would propose would be ship placement based on your initiative. So if you think about it, if you are all lower initiative, your ships probably go down before other people's ships. Understanding what you want to accomplish with where you put your ships allows you to create a different environment to force your opponent into what that you want to engage with them. So, for example, if you're flying all droids, if you put them all clustered into the center into two groups, your opponent might split their fire up. You can either choose to go all in on one, all in on the other, or you could split both of your groups up and go in to both of them. But I think understanding your initiative and how you're placing makes a world difference. And I'll give an example with that. For example, when I run Jango Fett, because he's an I-6, if I have other I-6s I'm going against and we have a road roll, if I get the first road roll, I place different with my Jango than I do if I know I'm the last player. And I say that because if I know that there's going to be a Poe or Defender Vader, which I'll disagree a little bit with George in that I wouldn't be 100% anti-jousting Jango with a Vader, as long as I'm not going to be quite at that range one, because I know that Vader is going to 3-hard, 3-bank, or 4K. That's what that Vader is going to do. It doesn't do very many other options, and when it does, it loses its ability to punch. And so if I can get my joust just right with my Jango, boom, there goes a proxy mine. Go ahead. You want a 4K? Oh, you're not going to 4K? Now I know you're going to 3-hard. So you're going to do one of the two maneuvers, and my Jango is just going to either 1-bank or 1-hard, because if you 3-hard, I'm going to be behind you and force you no matter whether you're first or second. And if you're silly enough to 4K into a proxy mine, whatever, I'm going to shoot you out my butt. I'm just like I'll take the range one shot as long as you hit that proxy mine, because that's guaranteed damage. I don't have to worry about freaking evade. So I think understanding your ship placement based on your initiative and maybe even your opponent's initiative helps you to determine where you want to create your engagement field or maybe that goes into your battle plan, I guess, in that asset.
Yeah. But I agree with, that is part of, I do think about that too. So I agree with you on that.
All right. Any other ones?
Struggling here to get another one.
Nope.
Well, that's it. We don't that's have to.
Yeah.
JJ, any more?
Yeah, I can't
think
that's of all anything. I got on my end I can think of right now. Yeah.
All right. I don't see any more from the chat. If anybody else in the chat has any more, you're welcome to drop them in there. We can add them to the list. Essentially, what we'll do is if we don't get to it next week, and I'll be honest, we're going to probably take a break from our chess theory next week because we have Dion on, and I want to discuss alternate tournament styles and kind of go back to the discussion we had 2 months ago, because I really think, and again, maybe this is a little bit of a bias on my behalf, but I really think this engagement that we're getting out of people going to in-person tournaments now, and the more that we're seeing, I think is extremely beneficial. I really think this is very good for the game. This is what people were worried about when we hit COVID. And now that we're getting back to it, I really hope that there is a open, lively discussion. And I will tell you, there is a tournament in December I'm going to with a group of locals where it's crazier than Cray Cup. We're going to put five lists against five lists. Five lists. That's just insane to me.
Jeez. It's too much.
But whatever. That's what we're going to do. So,
old style XTC. That's what
yes.
It's like.
Yeah, exactly. XTC. To some extent, I wonder if it's modeled after it. I'm not part of the coaching and implementation. I'm just... we elected somebody else. We just said, screw it. I didn't want to be in charge. I didn't want anything to do with it. I literally just want to go play X-Wing. That's all I want to do. So I don't know. I don't know how that whole thing's going to work, but we have a whole group of locals going down to Ohio. We'll have more information on that once they start posting it. I don't know if they've posted any of it. I think it's called... I don't know what it's called. You're killing me here. I got to go look it up. Rust Cup. possibly is the name that I heard for it.
Sounds about right. The Rust Cup.
But it's in Ohio. It used to
be the Outrider, right?
I think so, yes. I think it used to be called the Outrider.
Yeah.
Wow, I remember that.
Yeah, so it's that's
1.0 days.
1.0 days, yeah.
Yeah.
We're not playing 1.0 this time, hopefully. hopefully. I don't know how to play 1.0, so I hope we don't. I really hope we don't play 1.0. That would suck for me. Anyway. All right. Well, cool. Well, thank you. I think that was a very productive segment. So next week, we will be back, and we will be talking about tournament formats, kind of how to get engage a little bit more into the engagement. I also thought it would be a benefit to have a conversation about list building for the newer player. I think we're going to cover that next week because I've had that on the docket for like 4 weeks now, and we just haven't done that. But I think if we bring Dion in, or Dion in, it will be a benefit to have a longer term experienced player, as well as somebody that does judging and may be able to give some advice to that. So I think we're going to cover that plus Crate Cup plus the alternative tournament formats and how that all works. And could that work in a Worlds environment next week? And then the week after, we will be back having a conversation. We're going to take all of these opening theory principles and we're going to apply them in TTS and actually analyze different opening maneuvers. So guys, you got 2 weeks to build me some TTS lists and what you want to do for opening maneuver things. And we're going to actually talk and take these principles that we've been talking about and put them onto paper or screen. Right. It's not paper. It's old school D&D stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody have any quick last shout outs before we head out?
Again, I want to definitely shout out Chris Allen for organizing the Crate Cup event. Definitely very well run. Thank you to Dion from Gold Squadron for coming out to doing the streaming, as well as Scott from Hexiled Gaming, who was there co-commentating with him and also assisting with the camera stuff. You guys are awesome for coming down to this event and streaming it, and as well as all the awesome players that came around from everywhere to come out to play over at Crate Cup. We had a blast playing over there. I met so many people that I can't wait to see again and have a blast again. Yeah.
Awesome. And if you didn't know, we have 1 week until Michigan GT X-Wing Championship. We only have 10 spots left. So we have sold a whole bunch of tickets in the last month. So if you would still like to come compete, we have amazing prize support, a whole bunch of stuff that we have going on, plus this Mando kit, which I had confirmation that it officially arrived in the US last week. So we officially have this kit.
Nice.
That's awesome. Looks good.
I'm super excited. Cannot wait to do this. So if you are in Michigan and you want to come out, it is $40 for the tournament. We do apologize, but there is going to be some amazing prize support, and we are working to not only do this kit, but actual, not cash prizes. You can't see my quotes because you can't see my picture, but we're going to actually do like prize support that will equal the dollar amount. So if you're from Canada and you haven't come out yet, Deslin, calling you out there, baby, come on down. It'll be a fun journey. They have cheap hotels if you want to spend the night and not have to drive back to 7 hours to your homeland in another state, another country.
Yeah.
Anyway. So it'll be fun that we'll also be talking about that next weekend, but it will be a smaller segment. We won't take up the whole show with that. So cool. Well, thank you all for joining us. We will be back next week, 9 p.m. Eastern time or 2100 hours, depending on where you live, if you would like. And if you would like, we are going to take a quick 3 minute break to reset cameras and stuff. And we will be back with our Universe Extended discussion on Andor, because why the F not? Thank you all. Have a good night, and we'll see you here in 3 minutes.